Welcome. This is My Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower.
Tonight's show. We're going to deal with, for sure, metaphysics, spirituality,
and a number of elements that are science, and some parts of it that I would call, for some people, if they haven't heard this show before, or haven't heard some things I've thought about,
maybe a little bit far out.
And I thought tonight would be good to look at and maybe go into depth of a part of existence that most people seek, they desire to have as part of their experience. When I say most, at least a plurality of people. It's a little less than 40% of the people that I meet, and from what I know of this this part of our existence, it is therefore the most desired of all places where people want to go to after they die, and that's the fourth astral subplane. Now, why do we want to do a show in depth then about a place where I've covered it as well as other dimensions of time and space? And the reason for it is that since most people, on a plurality basis, not majority, but still most people compared to any other subplane, want to be after death in this environment, it'd be good to look at it in depth, and we'll discover a great deal about where those same people are in terms of living here and now. And that's not to in any way disparage their desires, because the desire is to take them to the dimensional part of the astral plane, that they live out a much greater part of life than they're in the physical dimension. And let's talk about that. Let's talk about some of the physics involved in this, so that it's pretty clear, at least by the time I'm done, I hope, that this is what's going to take place. What we think of as the certainty of things in the physical world is really more based upon the limitations of the thought of God in this most difficult place for human beings and most of the kinds of life we live in. And it has to do with the way God expresses itself dimensionally and in thought. Therefore, also talk about it in terms of thought and form throughout the entire universe. The best way to understand it is that there are seven vibrational parts to God, seven vibrations. Some people may actually call them substrings, or parts of a super-duper string, and it's seven-dimensional. And each dimension actually has seven subparts to it as well. So there's actually 49 pieces to this whole, we'll call it conglomerate, of the vibration of God. And what causes the vibration? Well, two things. In terms of God and everything else in the universe, you have to have thought, which is the first two parts of God's mind.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, I'm back. Seems there were some problems, engineering, line noise, something was going on. And hopefully this is going to be better, if any of you were experiencing that, if it's going to be clear or sound. Getting back to what I was saying, hold on a minute or two ago. So you have seven parts to God's, we'll call it, vibration. And I'm just talking about what composes a vibration. And it's actually the two parts of God's mind, choices, sometimes will, which is the consistency of choice, or sometimes people call it purpose, or sometimes people call it creativity or creation. Those are all parts of the same thing, which is the first part of God's mind. The second part is the direction to those choices. It has a limitation, then, on the field of choices itself. So it actually is part of the creative process. It also is what we call consciousness or love, planning. Those are all pieces of that second part. Put the two together, you get thought. When the thought is in the general direction of God, it's spirit. Okay? Especially when we talk about spirit with light in it. Okay, and then, so spirit is great, but it doesn't create the vibration. The interesting thing is that it has to also either do one of two things. The thought of God has to either be sacrificed and completely hidden from or blocked from the form that the thought's going to be in. If that takes place, and that only takes place in a couple of places in the universe, but if that does take place, then you get a mirroring effect, a vibrational bounce back, that is almost a reversal of the actual vibration. And that those vibrations are legitimate. They just happen to be mirrored, in a sense. And some people call it monadic vibration, but it doesn't matter what we call it. It's just what I just said. Then every place other than those two kinds of ways that are mirrored and or bounced back, and or majorly sacrificed in some limitation, which causes the vibration. Then the rest of the ways has to do with thought encountering form. And when God's thought encounters form, you get one of the remaining five vibrations in what is known as a direct way, rather than a bounce back or a sacrificial way. And I'm not being extremely clear with this because there's a few things in physics that would explain this better, but unfortunately, we aren't there yet. Humanity has not, on this planet, has not yet discovered a couple things that would explain this probably a lot better to some people anyway. But this is close enough. So you get seven vibrations, you know, and it's like in the song, you know, good vibrations. Huh? We're getting good vibrations. And those good vibrations are God vibrations. And they make up what we would call the extra dimensional parts and the dimensional part for where we are of this string, we'll call it, that interconnects all forms, or all lack of form. Everything that exists is connected through what we could call this vibration of God in seven different ways. Well, isn't that interesting? And there's a sub-vibration to each of the major vibrations. So when we talk about the fourth astral subplane tonight in depth, we're talking about the fourth sub-vibration of God in a form. We call the form the fourth astral subplane energy, right? And that's what we're going to be discussing this evening. Now, I know this sounds like way out there for some folks, but for others it might clear up something that they may have, you know, misunderstood or not completely gotten, like in reading chapter 10 in the textbook. What happens is that most people think too narrowly about the universe, thinking that when we talk about dimensions, it's like three dimensions in the physical plane, and that's it. And most scientists feel that too. These other dimensions of time and space, though, are much bigger. And there's more dimensionality to them the vibrations are more complex because they move in different ways, more ways, than they do in the physical world. And in the astral world, the direction that energy moves is actually another dimensional part of the astral world. So you get the direction of energy. Here, it doesn't matter what direction energy is moving in, right? It seems to us to be the same. In the astral world, a direction is dramatically different. So two things that exist in the same three dimensions and even the same dimension of tongue, which is kind of not a full dimension anyway, but we'll call it that, don't actually touch each other, don't have anything necessarily to do with each other, unless they share the fourth part of the dimension, which is they're moving in the same direction. So, as an example, let's say that I were standing next to someone else, and literally, we would be physically touching each other, except that person is directing the energy around them with their mind, because energy bubbles not there, towards themselves. And I'm directing energy to some degree away from myself, at a different direction. We would never even know each other are there. That's how amazing it is to understand what we mean when we talk about the astral dimension. So we have sub-worlds of the astral plane that exist in three dimensions that are a little bit out of differences in space and time, three-dimensional. But they're even radically more different in out of space and time in terms of the consciousness of people that exist in. And as a result of that, the direction of the energy is more and more loving as you move into higher sub-dimensions of time and space in the astral world. Now it starts to make maybe a little bit of sense. So here we have this, we'll quote almost a formula for how the astral plane is put together. And that's the strange thing about it is that, looking at it from the framework, say, of how it's designed, it was designed by God, but it's actually created by people and anything else that can think enough to have enough desire. Okay, usually in the thinking is creative imagination, to have enough desire to have an effect on the environment that they exist in. If they don't have an effect, they can't stay conscious in that environment, and in that particular subworld, would not be able to stay. They would just literally vanish and appear in the subworld with the energy moving in a direction closest to their desires and level of consciousness. And it would be lower if they couldn't stay where they were at. So they would literally disappear one place and reappear virtually simultaneously in another subdimension lower. People who can exist in the highest subdimension could choose to go and exist in any lower subdimension. They do have a strange effect on the energies that they encounter, though, because while their consciousness is so much higher, their vibration, therefore, is higher, and it has some effect on things called the quantum constant, and it affects the small amount, the overall subplane that they exist on. Not to a worse extent, but to a betterment, but at a sacrifice of a great deal of their time. They lose the ability to live in time when they sacrificially move to a subdimension lower than where they could actually live at. And they do this because they want to help serve others. Some people do this, but they do so at a cost. That cost is, has a lot to do with those first two planes of existence where the mirror of vibration, or the opposing, sometimes it's called, of vibration, from sacrifice, either one, there are differences in those, but causes tremendous growth in life in lower planes through the development of consciousness, but at the cost of those that participate in it in one way or another. It's a fascinating idea. And it exists in the astral world that way. And we'll talk about that tonight. There are so many things to discuss and things that I've never talked about, to my knowledge, on the radio. And it's a sort of interesting thing because when we look at the process, there's a, we'll call it complementary form of development in the astral world, similar to the way the whole universe works, that you can also see some of it in the physical world, but it's not as noticeable. Because here things are slowed down to the point where we can barely notice anything. In the astral world, it becomes much more noticeable, because energy is following thought at a much greater rate. So as someone creatively imagines, their environment fairly quickly changes to match their thought, provided that their level of sense to the environment is equal, because it's the energy in their sense that directs the other energy by causing the replication. If someone loses the sense, they may still have the ability to creatively imagine to some extent, maybe not as much as they'd like, but without sense, they're not able to effectuate much of a change in the environment. So the loss of sense can be a really damaging problem, and as people age, in relative terms, in the astral world, that could be hundreds of years of time, though, and lose their senses because of their own selfishness, the result is they can't be very creative with the imagination they have left. They can pretend in reverie the way we can, with it being significantly more, we'll say, effective in their senses. They feel it more. But they can't necessarily create without really pretty good astral senses. So that once they start declining, the ability to create in the astral world really declines more rapidly, in effect, than even it does here in the physical world. Because astral things are easily damaged, and it's not that easy once the sense is damaged to get things right when you're trying to create something out of your imagination. Okay, so the fourth astral subplane is so attractive. Why? Because most people desire to have what it represents to them. And what it represents is an increase in creativity without the costs that are so inherent in the physical world. In a physical world, in order to create, there's tremendous force that opposes the creation. And people, more often than not, suffer some consequence of the forces imposed. It could be financial. It can be, because that's compressed time and energy. Or it could be something of a time model problem. It takes a lot of time to create. And just a lot of effort. In the astral world, that's not true. You can, if your senses are pretty pristine and pretty good shape and your creativity and thought is there, you can meet your desires pretty easily, whatever they may be. And the astral world is governed in the subworlds that aren't spiritual, are controlled more by personal interests. That's the third through the seventh subworlds. Those subworlds are controlled by more the desires of people. And so folks have desires when they die, and as they have lived here but couldn't have them realized. And one of the big desires for a plurality of people, less than 40%, but certainly more than a third, is to live a more creative life. Not willing to do so here. They're too afraid and don't like the consequences. But in the astral world, they are. And their consciousness moves up higher. So their ability to think is improved. And their senses also improve dramatically. They return to almost a pristine state. And so they can do whatever they would like to do. And if they like to create, then the fourth astral subworld is a big place for that. But the creations are seldom complete in terms of spiritual thought. They're mostly based upon the majority of them are based upon the desires, selfish desires of the person, not necessarily a soul-inspired desire to be a spiritual service to others. That doesn't have to be that way, but it is more likely that. Also, because people are more conscious, they want to appear to be even if they're not. So they put on a lot of airs, oftentimes disguising, if they can, their level of selfishness and making it look like, in an altruistic way, they're mostly doing things to be helpful towards others. It's really for the common good. You know. Except that God's choice for human beings is to individually create, but along with the good creations of others. It's not that people can't work together. As a matter of fact, that is desirable. But there's individual parts of the creation. So that's what usually ends up being kind of confused in the fourth sub. Well, we'll talk about that later. So this is an interesting examination, we'll say, more in-depth, not just about the fourth astral subworld, but also about all of the physics that gets into the equation. And it will apply to everywhere in the universe in some way. So tonight's show really is not going to be so limited as maybe the show topic indicates. So people have this desire. They want to go to this place where they can finally be more creative because they wanted to but were afraid and were too selfish. And they also want to look like they're more loving. And they want to experience a longer life with less discomfort and more comfort. And they want also to have a heightened value of feeling, what we'll call emotive feeling, as their primary focus in life. Physical things mean nothing to them because they don't really have them. Only in the seventh subworld do people pay much attention to creating physical looking things, experiencing the kind of the physicality thing. But they don't really exist because there is no physical energy. There's only astral energy, which can resemble some physical things, but doesn't have the permanence of physical things, so it needs constant reinforcement by the imagination of those around it. And if each person contributes something a little different to that, its permanence is virtually non-existent because it keeps either in slight or very much large ways of changing. So, so that's a desire that you can't necessarily establish unless you go off, and some people do this, especially in the seventh subworld, and try to live pretty much away from everyone else. The problem with that is that it takes a lot of sense to keep things like that going, even if nobody else is messing with them. And you become easy pickings for dark kinds of folks who are looking for folks who are using up their senses trying to make things that they're going to hold on to. So it's a real problem. And there's no great answer for it. If that's your desire, is to have all the things you ever wanted while you were physically alive and now you're dead, you end up, and you're usually very selfish for other reasons too, you end up in the seventh subworld, that could be a real pickle, a real problem. In the beginning it may seem like, oh gee, I can have anything I want. But in the end, it has very serious consequences. Now, the fourth subworld is not anything like that. People do create amazingly beautiful things. And they don't mess with other people's quote-unquote things. They don't, as a rule, generally don't. Because they recognize that whatever you do to others will be fairly quickly brought onto yourself, so everybody kind of leaves everyone to their own creations. But, which is a good thing. But people live mostly to experience some form of love, mostly to look more spiritual, to sometimes be more spiritual, and mostly to be clear. They exist to explore and become the creative things, creator that they weren't while they were physically alive. And this is a world, therefore, with a lot of results of that. Now you could say, well, how is it different than from the physical world, from the seventh subworld, as an example of extreme differences? because people still create all beautiful houses and beautiful this or that. Yeah, they do, but they use those things on a regular basis. And in the use of them, their senses keep things on a virtual, almost subconscious level, pretty much the same, because nobody else is doing anything to harm those things. And so it works. But they don't collect. They don't collect very many things and hold on to them that aren't being used. And when I say used, I mean in some way interacted with by other life. It could be their life. It could be the life of animals that are around them or plants. But that it has to be some kind of life that's interacting with it, which also helps keep the thing there. So they don't have to support it all with just their own senses. And they're very careful about doing this. They recognize if they create something that other life isn't using and that they aren't particularly interacting with because they don't have any real need for it except to have it around, that produces some very negative effects on their senses and they age. So they know that and they don't do that too much. People in the fifth subworld deal with it a different way. They regulate or control it, or they limit how many things they have by living a relatively meager existence, usually away from the folks who want to regimentate everything. But in either case, those answers are not very good if you want to be creative. Neither one works. You can't be very creative if you're living a sparse life, and you can't be very creative if you're living a regimentated life that everybody else is equally controlling, sort of like on a mass level. Well, things do remain pretty much the same, and you don't have to worry about that, but there's nothing creative going on there. I mean, everybody's blank-blank looks the same as everybody else's blank-blank, you know. And so that's the fifth subworld answer. The fourth is more, really more creative, and it's definitely more what we'll call a loving place. And the vibration of God is more clear. Now here's, let's go back to that vibration idea again, because I like good vibrations. The thing is that it's not just the quality of the vibration, although there's certainly that. People would say that there's a phase change between the vibration or direction of God's thought and what might be manifested in each lower subworld. So there's this, that changes. But the other thing is intensity is reduced too. So you're losing the accuracy of God's thought, and you're losing the intensity of God's thought at the same time. So in the fourth subworld, things are not nearly as intense in terms of the creative value of anything in comparison to the first subworld. Not even close. Life being less intense is also less meaningful. Okay? Life that has to it a lack of common direction to God's thought also loses meaning, even if it's highly creative. So those two things are not 100% by any stretch in the fourth astral subplane, and people notice this over time, and some choose to try to leave and go to a higher subworld to live in, but they have to maintain their consciousness high enough so they can stay there. The unfortunate thing is that by the time people figure this whole equation out that I'm discussing with you, they usually have diminished their senses far enough so they can't just instantly leave and go to the higher subworld. So they didn't have the desire to go there when they were younger because they weren't conscious enough at that point. But they got more conscious, but they also diminished their sense. And they kind of reached a point where they were static. They couldn't go to the higher, yet they also knew that were conscious of where they were was not where they'd like to be. That's when you reach this, what would be considered contradiction in desire. And when people have that, they sometimes suffer because consciousness does lower as a result of noticing that problem. And the only solution to it is to spiritually discipline themselves in as quickly of the time as possible by serving others, focusing out, not being concerned about leaving. So weird, isn't it? You have to change the desire to leave to desire to serve, which may be not to leave. And that's how you leave. Okay, well, figure that one out. And so a lot of people do have trouble with that. And that is a major issue in the fourth subplane. More than any place else, it's actually the biggest problem people have. Because over time, and we're talking about hundreds of years of their life there, a lot of people reach this conclusion that I just went to, and they have the experience of a life crisis that resembles what I described. How long do people live there? Oh, 600 or more years is not uncommon in the fourth subworld, and so that's a long time. And somewhere oftentimes between 300 and 400 years, people come to this realization. So they've got a couple hundred more years or longer, maybe 250 years, that they're going to be living in this quandary. The way out of it is through serving, spiritually disciplining a person, yourself, so that your senses actually improve, but for the purpose of service. And the service, unfortunately, sometimes is a sacrifice of time. Remember that. Because sometimes you end up going to the fifth subworld to deal with the situation. Or the time you have left in the fourth subworld is spent serving others. Which seems like it is a sacrifice of time. Either way. You go to this fifth subworld, you just have less time to live in. And if you stay in the fourth, you lose time that way. The only way you really gain anything out of the process is after you can truly raise your consciousness through spiritual discipline. You could eventually leave for a higher subworld. Oftentimes, it's the second spiritual subplane people end up in. Some just go to the third, and that's a big chunk. But in any case, either one of those produces radical increases in the amount of time a person has to live. And that doesn't mean that you will actually live that time, because you may still choose to go to a lower subworld to do some service, which causes a great loss of time. But nobody seems to really care about that if they're spiritual serving. It's only the people who aren't and think about doing it. They suffer to some extent. All right. So the fourth astral subworld has a lot of things that are really strange. It's right in the middle. Remember, it's right between the higher subworlds and the lower. And so there's a tremendous amount of conflict that happens in people as they live their life there. And try to develop themselves to spiritual development. And that's why the fourth ray and the fourth, we'll call it ray center, which is the spine, sacral center chakra, is oftentimes stated as being, harmony through conflict. Because the conflict seems to come about because it's right in the middle. And you get torn between these two things. So people in the fourth subworld are oftentimes very torn about who they are, what they're doing, and oftentimes it happens after they've been there for a while. Sometimes it happens early, which is good, by the way. And sometimes it doesn't happen until it's literally too late. So it depends on the person. Some people just do better there. Everybody that gets to the fourth subworld had a bump in consciousness just by going there. That's true of the whole astral world itself. When we die from the physical world, there's grace. You get virtually new senses because you virtually did not use your astral senses while you were physically alive. It's where your consciousness is focused. It's used the senses as the seat of your existence. So the self develops itself where the consciousness is focused through those centers, and that's where you are aware of the world that is around you. Here, we're focused in the physical senses, and consequently, we live in the physical world. That doesn't mean we have to, but we do. We choose to be here in some respects, and it's also a reaction to the process of incarnation, which is a little complicated, and I'm not going to go into that tonight. But anyway, when you get to the astral subworld, because you've used up your physical body's senses, they're just no longer available to you. The body may have died. That means that one sense came apart. If only one out of seven senses falls apart in the physical body, which is really, these are really etheric parts of the senses, you die. You can't live as a human being with only six or five senses. Now, you can lose the organ of the sense, being that you can lose your eyes and hearing, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the actual etheric sense. If you lose that, it's bye-bye. it's called separation. The consciousness separates from the sense, and the person can no longer keep the body alive. And so, actually, the best way to understand it is the monad through the soul can't keep the body alive, but that's a more technically defining way of saying it. Also, the interesting thing about this whole scenario is that when you die, your consciousness, a short time after physical death, moves to the astral world because of your own desires, and those senses have barely been used, so it's like you got brand new senses all over again, and a new body. Wow. So, but the senses are actually better. They work better than the physical ones ever did. And you're not an infant, unless you died as an infant anymore. If you died as an adult, you have an adult mind, adult understandings, and you have perfect or near-perfect senses. That's pretty good. A lot of people think that's terrific until they abuse those senses and don't realize that they actually fail even at a faster rate than they were when they abused their physical senses. So that's not so good of an outcome. Not everybody chooses to do that. And hopefully the folks who are listening tonight won't. That's part of what I'm hoping tonight's show will help you to do, is to realize, well, no matter what you choose to do with your physical body and its senses, at least when you get to the astral world, you'll say, yeah, I remember that guy. He was right. Here I am. I'm in the fourth subworld. That's everything he said it was. And he said, don't just spend the next 100 years messing around selfishly, because those senses I have, they're so great right now, will be virtually gone, and then, or at least be damaged to them. So that it'll be very difficult for me to live a more spiritual life if that's what I choose to do. So maybe I should heed these warnings and take the suggestions and see how it is to live more focused out towards this, more loving. This is certainly part of tonight's message, and I hope it's coming through. All right, so we'll go to break here in about a minute or so. But the fourth astral subplane is a unique place because it shows so much about the astral world in general. It's really revealing of a lot of things that you only see pieces of if you examine all the other subworlds. It's sort of like we'll call it the concentrated lessons of astral life can be found easiest by studying the fourth subplane, which is what we're going to be doing. All right. Now, also I want to mention that in looking at how these dimensions are formed, we need to realize that it's human beings on a specific planet that creates these dimensions more than anything else. So we like the primary, beings. That's true for the mental, astral, and physical worlds. And it's different from one planet to the next. I'm talking tonight about Earth. To describe the fourth astral subplane on another planet would be silly, because there's almost an infinite variety of them. And the physics is somewhat the same, but the planets are radically different. So you end up with a lot of different results than what we are so familiar with here. Some planets only exist in astral form, and their dense part of them is really more gaseous than physical. Isn't that weird? That's also true of mental planets. So all we see is like a gaseous body. Usually those planets are bigger, but they don't have any physical life on them. They have astral or mental life. That's a whole different thing. And there's reasons for that. And it usually happens in solar systems that are either young or very old. Very old solar systems have usually just one planet on them that's very close to what is a kind of burnt-out star, if you want to call it that. A little tiny star the size of Earth, and there's a planet usually goes around them. That's where supermasters live in that solar system. And they can live there for billions of years with instability. And usually there aren't any other planets around besides that. It's kind of a strange kind of thing. And there's a lot of those, by the way, so don't think there aren't a lot of masters. There's only not very many here on Earth because we're not a sacred planet, and if we're not in our third type of development, the third star development, it's called third stage. But someday we can look towards that. So, okay, we're going to go ahead and take a break right now. We'll be back, give or take, in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Back. This is Why Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about the fourth astral subplane in depth, and it goes beyond that. It's actually a kind of expansion on how all the planes of reality really fit together and how they interplay. So we're going to be talking about a lot of different things, and some of it has to do with how it affects our life here now. So it's all going to be an inclusive show, I think, tonight, rather than seemingly such a narrow thing to talk about. All right, so as I was saying, people desire on a scale of about close to 40% of the population on this planet to be in the fourth astral subplane. They don't consciously know that, by the way. I have a fraction of those folks have any idea of what I just said. But you out there that are listening, especially if you've listened before or read before, probably do know what I'm talking about. Or if you've read some other material from some other writers in Ancient Wisdom, you may be equally aware. Now, the point about this is kind of interesting. Here we have people that have a desire to live differently than they're living here right now. And yet their fears and selfishness in general, we'll call it illusion, of existence here prevent them from living the life that they want to live and desire to live and do to some extent live when they go to the astral world. And they get a new body, the senses, and they have a much easier time because the physics has changed. It's almost thousands of times easier to get energy to follow thoughts, so everything is less forces. The whole life is a better life, but easier. The lifetime is much longer. You live, if you go to the fourth subworld, you could live 600, maybe even up to 700 or more years. And that's astral years. Remember, an astral year, because of a thing called time dilation, is in our time here, 1 year here could be 15 years or so there. So, well, you can see what's happening. And so, someone who lives, say, 50 years here, would be 750 astral years in the fourth astral subworld. You getting it? Okay. Now, something that happens because of this, which is important to some people, is that people who die from the physical world and go on to live in the astral world, especially the astral subworld, which is the more common place that people end up, and the largest of the astral subworlds, and the closest in a three-dimensional sense to Earth, to the physical Earth. Those folks that leave and go on to live there have a desire to also be closer to the people they left. And they understand, because they're in a higher consciousness than before they left, that they're living a lot more time than the people who are physically alive. And they, their life is creatively changing very rapidly in comparison to people who are physically alive. The distance in emotive senses, and also beyond the emotive sense, but that's the key sense it uses, the emotional senses. The beyond that, though, also mentally in their development, in a lot of other ways, causes them to shift and to become more distant from who they left and what they left here in the physical world. They know those people will eventually be coming. And if they die within, well, I just gave it, within 50 years, it's almost a certainty that they'll probably meet relatives and friends and people they're close to in the fourth astral subworld. That kind of puts a twist on things. It's not so much like that in the fifth or sixth or seventh subplanes, because time is not dilated as much. But in the fourth, people are keenly aware of this question of separation. And because due to the time dilation, there's a greater separation of time. You can see that that's true. And so they actually are proponents of trying to have communication with people in the physical world more than anyone else, because they're sensitive to it, but they also recognize they're not going to possibly be that connected to the people who leave here eventually and will die and go there at some other time. So they tend to have the closest, we'll say, connection with those people they think are going to die in the relatively near future in relationship to them. And they have a partiality towards those people. They also have a tendency to try to work through psychics in the physical world, somewhat successfully, but not, it's not very effective, but it's somewhat successful. It at least lets people know that there's still people alive somewhere else. They really can't communicate very much through this other physical person. So they usually just use one or two senses out of the seven in the other person's astral body, which is, it's hard on them. It's emotionally draining. It has an adverse effect on all the senses, including the etheric and physical sense. So, I mean, it just has negative consequences, but it does help in some other ways. The interesting thing is that people in the third astral subworld are not as desiring of this same issue. They live longer than people in the fourth. And they kind of almost look at it as a fait accompli, you know. Forget about those folks. It's going to be, you know, there's just too much too much dilation of time. They're changing too fast. They're living too many years in a short period of time. So it's only on the fourth that you find that the goose really nut, that they have to kind of crack, that is going to be that, well, who and what, in what way will I relate to them when they get here? They think about that a lot. People on the fifth do to some extent too, but it's a little bit different because they're more narrow in their consciousness, and they don't have the same level of desire for creativity, so they don't change as radically differently from the folks that they leave behind. It's kind of a strange idea when you think about it, that the change of yourself becomes part of the equation of how you're going to relate to somebody when they show up in your dimension. Okay, so this rears at some people. It really does. And it's not a comfort for those who are separated for a long period of time because there's too much change. Now you might say, well, what about people in the first and the second subworld? There you have 24 and 21 times instead of 15 times the dilation. It's just huge. Well, yeah, the odd part about it is the changes that take place in those people is about how spiritual they are. They don't change that much from where they were because they were spiritual before they left. And there's a more, and it's a higher level of consistency to their relationships with people who are left behind. And so when they reappear, or they appear in the astral world, there's less of this disparity. The fourth has the greatest conflict, really, in it, at least for the folks in the fourth, you know, kind of living there. So there's a lot of conflict. Remember I said that people, it's harmony through conflict. They have to work out all these issues about their own spiritual selves through a lot of the conflicts that they experience by being in the fourth astral subworld. It's a different way of understanding the experience. And there's so much complexity to when you start changing physics to life that this is only just a surface issue in comparison to a lot of other deeper parts of the issues that arise. I'll talk about some of them tonight, and they will relate to how we live here. Okay, so the fascinating part about this is that after all that I just said, it actually turns out that people in the fourth astral subworld have a deeper need in some respects to reestablish a relationship with people who come there than just about anybody else, but they also are more conflicted about it. So go figure that one out. Okay. And that's part of the equations, part of the people who end up going there is what they're going to be dealing with. It is not an easy thing to deal with. The other thing to be concerned about here is what is it like to live 600, 700 or more years? Most people in this realm where we are, because it's so physically hard, the forces are so great, at 100 years, people are just about burned out if they live that long. And they aren't really concerned about living any longer. I mean, if you ask people who are over 100 years old, well, do you want to live another, if you could, would you like to live another 50 years? You may not get too many positive answers about that. Some of it's because of the illnesses that obviously people endure. But in other ways, it's also about just the tiredness of dealing with the forces entailed. The only way to get out of them is to lead a spiritual life. If you lead a very strong spiritual life, you can easily live to the maximum, which would be, or close to the maximum, which is 147 years, without adversely affecting the demonic energies in their bodies. And you could live that long without experiencing near the forces of people who live half that much time. That's hard to believe, but it's the truth. So you end up with a very, very different kind of life going into the astral world. And, of course, that tells us something about people who live for long periods of time and go to the fourth astral subplane. This is a kind of a difference in what we'll call the perspective. Let's say that you're 40 years old and you die. And your desire is to have been more creative, you, of course, could end up being in the fourth astral subworld, provided that you were loving enough by that age to have done so, which is admirable if you are. That's good. Now, your perspective on time, though, is that you only lived 40 years in the physical world. Now you face a lifetime, eventually discovering this, maybe, that is going to be many, many hundreds of years, and the time perspective changes the relationship of the person to the people they know there, to the people that they may be hoping to see at some time in the future from the physical earth. Usually, if you die at 40, you believe that the people that you knew are going to live another 40 years or so, you realize that that's just too long into the future to even consider a realistic interrelationship between you and them when they do get to the astral world. But there's something else that needs to be addressed here. Someone who goes there, who only lived 40 years here, looks at such an incredibly long life and is faced with the question of, okay, I'm here to be more creative, but can I really maintain this? Can I really do all the things that would make my life meaningful for so many centuries of time? And, of course, the answer is no. The odd part about it is that if a person only is concerned about themselves, or lower self, and is generally in the astral subworld from desires, they eventually run out of their desires, and then they start changing from one thing to the next, at a faster and faster rate. Their life becomes scary, kind of incoherent, because every 6 months or a year they're doing something different. Or maybe it's every 5 years even, because remember how long they're living for. And there's a desperation in that. And because there's a time that is almost so far out you can't even imagine, that people suffer from it. Now, some say, hey, this isn't what life's about. Life's about being virtuous and helping to co-create with God and others who are doing the same, leading spiritual life. Assuming they make that shift, everything's going to be okay. If they don't, they live a depressing life of misery to some extent, without enough really of any meaning from the things that they're doing or the relationships that they're having. There's a lot of that kind of comparison in some of the stuff I wrote in Afterlife Love, if you want to read about that. So it's an interesting point that dying early and going to the fourth astral subworld, if you're not a spiritual person, can lead to some significant elements of suffering over time. Another perspective to look at is what happens if you live a long time and then go to the fourth astral subworld, but you weren't very creative here. Regrets. Most people end up spending a considerable amount of time in regret. Most of it occurs during the first century or so of life. Instead of it being the opposite of the 40-year-old, who, as time goes by, they get more and more despondent, there's a lot of regret initially because they realize that here in the physical world, they don't have any chance any longer to create something, yet this is the most creative, challenging place they could be compared to the astral world. And for all intents and purposes, many people just about throw away their life. Even though they may live to be 80, 90 or more years old, they didn't do much. They didn't do anywhere near enough. And this starts creeping in oftentimes to people who are in that age group before they physically die, because I know that because I talk to them. And so they say, gee, I really regret. And of course I say, well, you're still here, so why not do so? Oh, I can't do anything now. My feet hurt, my legs hurt, my back hurts. I don't have the sense anymore. Of course, I can, but they have these other things as excuses. The odd thing about it is, no matter how bad your senses are, if you change to be focused out and spiritual, they'll improve. So, I mean, but you can't do it for that reason. The motive can't be to improve your senses to be, so, and all you have to do is be spiritual because you won't ever work. But at any rate, so we have another comparison here, another kind of, we'll almost call it a contradiction, that people who live a long time aren't necessarily going to be wowed and amazed by their level of creativity once they get to the astral world, because even though they have grace, they have new senses, they got all this other stuff, they also have the life before where they wasted a lot of it, and even though they may be creative to some extent in the fourth astral subworld, eventually, because they are more conscious, they realize that they have to be more spiritual too. It may take 100 or 200 years before they reach that point, because the meaning in their life isn't rising the way they expected it to, even though they have these great senses and they're doing a lot more creation. Interesting point. All of this is basically, if you look at it, a remedial lesson. God's giving us grace, but in that grace is also a message. Co-create with God and others who are doing it as well, as souls, of course, or suffer. Suffer now, suffer later, but suffer. Not because you're being punished, but because you're punishing yourself. So it's an interesting paradigm, and the whole fourth subworld has this more keenly present than any other subworld. You can see it everywhere, virtually, that you go. And it's in almost everybody. Some part of it is. It's fascinating. And it's more revealing, really. And it goes to the fifth, or you go to the third, it won't be as revealing. It's much more revealing on the fourth. And yet, so many people want to desire in ways that causes them to end up in the fourth. And if they know anything about it, a lot of people actually want to go to the fourth and study some of the stuff in Ageless Wisdom. They don't realize what they're asking for, you know, because there's going to be these conflicts that disrupt their harmony and that they're going to need to resolve. So what they were escaping while they were physically alive, they will find less escape from eventually while living astrally. Interesting point. All right, there's other elements of the fourth subworld that we need to cover and talk about. People, when they form relationships in the fourth subworld, have a time problem. They realize that they're going to live a long time. I mean, that's almost obvious to anybody that goes there within a very short time. The people live there very long because they ask people and people don't. They may not, in appearance, show their age, because they could use their creative imagination and sense to look virtually any way they want for a while anyway. As they get older, it takes more and more sense and imagination to keep themselves looking usually better and younger. And eventually they get to a point where they can't do it anymore. But nonetheless, that's a big deal for some people. And in addition, the idea that you're going to be living centuries causes some people to find it difficult to maintain a close friendship or loving relationship with another person. The reason for it is simple. For a lot of people, the concept of like marriage or being partnered in the physical world is based upon a few decades of time, often. At most, not much more than 50 years, right? For most people, that's true. In the astral subworld, the fourth astral subworld, we're talking like 500 years, the same person. And you would have to have two things going for that kind of relationship to last. The first is that you have to love each other. And I mean, I'm not talking about like, oh, let's just hang out and be together. Kind of. You really need to have love, or else the person isn't going to be a person you can create with. You're not going to be able to be together in a creative way, because love is the way that you interact together that causes you to be co-creative together. And I'm talking about the universal kind of God love, but I'm also talking about romantic as well. And so that's a difficulty. And then you've got this other thing that's going to happen, that you're going to be in a position now where whether you love the person or not, that's certainly important, but you're in a position where what you create has to be virtually the same thing, or the creations become forces between you that will cause separation. The only thing that I know of that you can create for hundreds or thousands or millions of years is light, God. That you can do forever and ever and ever and not make any forces and be creative to the level beyond any possible way that a person could ever really be. So there's challenges with no boredom, no tedium, no forces, no repetition, which is magnified by two people doing it together. So it's magnified if you spiritually co-create, and it's magnified if you don't do that, and you have forces, and you have separation, and repetition, and boredom, and that gets one source. So guess what happens in the fourth astral subworld? The conflict again. You either end up with serial monogamy, where you have relationships with people that do last for, you know, maybe 50 years, 60 years, whatever, and you go on to someone else. Or, and that's because you're creative, but you're not creative virtuously creative. Not creating, co-creating with God and with others who are doing that, and with each other who are doing that. So it eventually causes separation of people. And it lowers their consciousness, and they resent each other. I mean, it causes all kinds of problems. So it puts a kibosh on true loving monogamous relationships if you're not living spiritually. There's an absolute, and I'm going to tell you this, I know this is going to sound terrible, there's an absolute time period that people can live non-spiritually together without it just destroying themselves and their relationship. And that absolute time period is about 70 years, give or take. Now, I know that that's we could probably get some terrible emails about this, but it's true. Now, why is 7 years? Why not pick some other number, you know? It's just, there's a lot of science behind it, but I don't want to make it science. I'd just like to say, let's say, in my observation, based upon what I've seen in the astral world and in the physical world, and from a lot of other standpoints, psychologically speaking, and many, many things, this is what I've come to the conclusion of. Now, what about people that have been married 80 years? Pretty unusual. Could be. That means that like, they were married. If they lived to be 100, they were married maybe when they were 20. It's possible. And they lived 80 years. That's a rare event. Is it likely to have happened? No. It's more likely they would have separated in some way or lived in a separated way. They may still be married. But to be truly together that long without leading a spiritual life together is nearly impossible. Now, if I'm right about what I'm saying, so this is for all of you to check out, right? Then people who go to the fourth astral subworld don't stay together more than 70 of their years either, except there's less forces, so you have to mitigate some of that. But even then, even when you include the fact there's less forceful, it isn't much more than that. It's like 90 or 100 years. People just don't stay together. And I know this because, well, I was the guy that went over there and checked it out. Yeah, I'm reporting. But regardless of whether you believe that or not, I want you to think about it in terms of what you've observed and seen in the physical world. Remember, just because people are living together and or claim to be, like, well, we still are married, you know, are they really together? And that's the question that comes about. And I think you'll find what I'm saying is true. All right, so some people overcome this. Some people in the fourth subworld, and beyond this fourth subworld, actually stay together much longer because they become spiritual. Now, if they become spiritual together within, usually, the time period I'm talking about, like 70 to 100 years, they may leave the fourth subworld and go serve in the third or, more likely, the second subworld together. Together. That's the amazing thing. So there's a whole bunch of promises. There's a whole bunch of good things that can happen. But it gets so much more intensified and it's so much more obvious in the astral world that you see the harmony through conflict. You see the spiritual side of life being developed by the forceful nature of the non-spiritual life. And it being more obvious to the residents. The denizens of the fourth subworld find themselves in a quandary because that which they have hidden for so long in the physical world while they were physically alive and some of the earlier years in the astral fourth subworld now become unhidden to them and to others. It's a good thing, but it has some serious consequences for some people. So relationships that are romantic or just even really good friendships, in order for them to sustain themselves for these very long times that people live in these other worlds, they need to be spiritual. Or they just don't, they fall apart. They can't sustain them. Interesting stuff, huh? I know. It's interesting. And some of you might say, well, how come, if there's so much less forces, why is it only maybe 30 years more? Well, because the senses and the bodies are more delicate. There are less forces, but there's a compensatory aspect to the nature of form. Form itself is more easily changed. So the diminishment of sense, the loss of consciousness can come from that, and the suffering can entail at an increased rate once things get going badly. So people that are starting to become forceful between each other because their creations are opposite to each other or in different modes eventually cause this havoc for themselves, and it isn't proportionate to the time difference, proportionate to the difference in time and in the sensitivity of the energy itself to be changed. You have to kind of compute those factors, scientifically speaking, to come up with the numbers that I'm telling you as well. And there are ways of doing that. It actually comes out about what I'm saying to you. All right, so interesting ideas. Huh? These are things that sociologically we don't really pay a lot of attention to because we're not there, right? But these relate to us here. We can see similar effects because it takes so long and we don't live very long. It doesn't register as often. We're just oblivious. In illusion. Here more than any place else, this is the place of illusion. It's a good thing, maybe, for some people, because, you know, if you're completely in illusion, ignorance is bliss. Well, it isn't that, but it might be somewhat helpful if you're really screwing up. For some people. Those are usually people who aren't going to end up being highly conscious in this world or probably even the next. Tonight, we're not talking about those folks. But remember, people who are in the fourth subworld, they were a bit more conscious than, on an average, people are here when they were here. So they are the more conscious of people, not the less conscious. Important thing to realize. And in going into any kind of depth in this subject, we also have to realize that at some point in time, there is a place for being concerned about the afterlife. It isn't, I mean, a lot of people say, well, why should I worry about that now? I'm only 42. I'm only 55. I'm only 36. You see, you don't know when you're going to die. That's why. It's relevant tomorrow, tonight, the next 5 minutes, who knows? That's why it's good to talk about these things and think about them, because the idea that you're just going to grow old and be this age when you die, whatever you decide upon, is, of course, nonsense. People die at all ages. Accidents occur, health issues happen, that may be illnesses of some sort, or something else. Also, the average life expectancy is an average. Some people just are going to live longer, and others are going to live less, forgetting about everything else. It's just part of their karma, which we call genetic structure. So it's the way it is. And also, their overall race structure may have something to do with it. If they live their life selfishly, it'll control them. People along the fourth ray in the physical world tend to live a very short period of time. Average about 49 years. Wow. You didn't know that. Well, generally, that's people who have like a personality right and one other fourth right in them. If both of those are like two of the four rays are fours, and particularly if one of them is a personality right, that oftentimes does not lead to a long life. Why? Because there's more conflict in your life than usual or average. And the conflict wears it out. The senses more, there's more likelihood that that will cause an accident or some other event to take place that will result in their death. Interesting. Very interesting. So people who are in professions that are on the fourth right may not live as long. And if you check that out, I think you'll see there's a lot of truth to that. Okay. Now, is that true also for people who are in the fourth subworld? I mean, they live a shorter time. Well, it's overwhelmingly overshadowed by the time dilation, so you don't notice it. Theoretically, it could be some element to that, of course. It's more that they feel miserable and suffer and sometimes get depressed more than if they die in the astral world. Isn't that they, in some way, just have it much earlier than? Because if you look at the proportions of time, they're pretty close to what they should be in terms of physics. So people don't, because people who go to fourth astral subworld do have a tendency towards more fourth ray natures, but they don't necessarily all have fourth ray personalities by the stretch. The desires are what control, and you can have fourth ray kind of desires. It doesn't mean that your personality is worth it. So, let that be kind of a guide for that thought process, we'll say. Let me talk more about the physics of the fourth subworld so that we have a better, we'll say, understanding of time and space and the speed of light, things like that. Just based upon the dilation of time, we could guess pretty accurately that the speed of light is approximately 15 times faster in the fourth astral subworld. There's some other aspects of this that I'm not going to go into that somewhat change a little bit. But let's just use that as a guide. What does that mean? Well, if you look at the astral Akasha, the astral Akasha is a reconstruction of time and events, from the perspective that, you could literally, move back and forth in time at a rate which is 15 times different than what you can here in the physical world. This is a little hard to understand, but when someone enters the astral Akasha, they're experiencing the feelings that people had a long time ago. Not necessarily people that you know. And it may be animals and plants and the feelings that were transferred onto those animals and plants by people or by other animals and plants. So all of that is part of the reality of the astral world. And in the fourth astral world, people tend to pay a particular attention to the astral Akasha. Not that it's very accurate. I'm going to explain why it isn't in a minute, but they do so because they are seeking to gain greater consciousness about the feelings of other people and their own feelings, and can do some comparisons and be able to alter their astral or feeling, emotive feelings into more loving responses. They really do want to be more loving, even if it's just to appear more loving. And sometimes they really do this just as an appearance thing. Other times they're very serious, want to change, and want to become more spiritual. So they'll go into the astral Akasha. The astral Akasha is the past of how people have felt. And you can live like you're there. You can experience them and interactive events, not about what they thought, mental thoughts, but what they felt in their feelings. You can see their forms, etc. Now, the problem with this is that feelings, as a guide, are not necessarily accurate or truthful. They just are feelings, with whatever the person felt. The accuracy of feelings is way less than 50%. So it doesn't, you can't say, well, this is what really happened. What you can say is this is what these people experience at some point. Whether or not it really happened is another thing. So they actually felt this way. And the reason you want to be able to feel how other people felt in a past sense, and do so going backwards in what is known as time at a 15 times greater rate, it means that while you're in the astral Akasha, for every 15 hours you spend there, you're only using up 1 hour of the astral time that exists outside of your experience in the astral Akasha. A little hard to understand that, isn't it? Okay, they both dilated effectively 15 times, but when you travel backwards in time, you're traveling at the speed of light by its own native speed. And that is different than how you exist in time while you're in the fourth astral subworld, not in the Akasha. The Akasha is like acceleration of experience of time. And that's just true wherever you are, mental world or otherwise. So you're experiencing really long periods, effectively, of time in a relatively shorter period of the time outside of the Akasha or the past part of time. And people do this sometimes to improve themselves in the fourth astral subworld. In comparison, people who do this in the seventh and sixth astral subworlds, the time is not as dilated, which is a good thing, by the way. But they still go into the Akasha because they want to feel the feelings which are purely purative. They're purely for their own benefit. Purely because they like the feeling itself, not to learn anything, gain any kind of consciousness or understanding. It's just because they like the feeling of it. It could be sexual, it could be something that is fun, something that is exhilarating. They do it for those reasons. So something that might be violent, which they like, or something, whatever it might be. So they go into the past part of time. Remember, it may not be very accurate either. It doesn't depict what really happened. It depicts what people felt at a particular place that is part of the surrounding energies. They can go in and re-experience it. Let's say that you're doing this on the seventh subworld. Time is dilated there about 6 times. And when you go into the astral part, into the Akashic part, you actually experience the 6 times again of time, even though the whole astral subworld of the seventh subplane is 6 times dilated in comparison to here. The past part of time effectively is dilated by the same amount indifference because it's the past and not the whole part of time. And it works out to being about the same amount. And so you experience 6 hours for every hour that would be, you wouldn't be in the reverie of experiencing feelings of the past, of either yourself, you can experience your own feelings, or that of others. This is what happens when we dream, by the way. So the fascinating thing about this is that people do this sometimes as an addictive way to experience a good deal of things. The bad part about it is that when they come back out, if they're not doing it to become more conscious, but they're doing it because they're selfish, they wear out their senses a lot faster because they spent 6 hours in comparison to everybody else living for 1 hour that wasn't in the Akashic experience that they went into to just to have some kind of fun. And so they come out 6 times use of their senses more than they would have. Okay? So going into these reverie kind of Akashic experiences in the astral world for most people is a negative thing. In the fourth astral subplane, people learn this fairly soon after getting there. And they're caught in a conflict. Do they want to just experience the feelings they want to experience? Or do they want to go in to only have whatever Akashic experiences are there for some degree of raising their consciousness? Which would mean they wouldn't do it very often, and would only do it when it seems appropriate for some need to become closer to other people or to become more loving in some way. This is the conflict that they face in the fourth astral subworld. In the lower subworlds, people do this almost as a compulsion, and they wear out their bodies much faster. In the third subworld, it's virtually forbidden from doing it by the people who are younger. They have technology that allows them to get away with a cheat, we'll call it. So they don't use up their senses any faster if they do choose to do it. And then, except for the folks that are older, don't have those technologies. And then if they do it, then they pay an even greater penalty because the time is dilated about 18 times. So you spend an hour in third world astral Akasha, and you end up using your senses 18 times as much than if you were living outside of that Akasha experience. The third world Akasha is a little bit different than, not significantly, but somewhat different than the fourth. Just as the fourth is somewhat different than the fifth and sixth and seventh. Now these Akashic experiences, again, are just feeling experiences, and they are not necessarily accurate. What people experience may not have even happened. It's how other people felt they happened. Okay, if you can imagine that. And every person that goes into the experience adds or subtracts some additional feelings to it, so it really gets confused there for a while. And some experiences are more sought after than others, and those get even more contaminated and confused than others because more people are attracted to experiencing them. And you could say, why would anybody want to spend their time in reverie, effectively, about feelings, to experience what even other people have felt? Why would they do that? And the answer is because they don't want to be creative themselves to the same levels. And so they'll just hop on the reverie of somebody else. Well, actually on the astral feelings of someone else or some other people. Because you can experience simultaneously several people at the same time in the astral world, be it in the Akasha or in the world itself, in the present time. Most of the astral world is composed of a dominance of present time. It lets you choose to go into the Akasha where time becomes very grossly dilated and all these other things that I described start to happen. Now these goofy themes are not really that important for us to know right now, but they tell us something about the physics. And they give us a little bit of difference of looking at how life can be so altered and changed by going into a different part of our universe where the physics changes. It's something called the quantum constant changes that allows for all these goofy things to take place. And particularly things about time. Time is a very strange thing, isn't it? And it's so hard for us to believe that you can experience time in so many different ways from other people. but it's true, you can. The Greeks used to call that kind of time kairotic time, by the way. The time that you experience in feeling. They actually came up with this in like 500 BC, if you can imagine. And figured it out. I don't know if they figured it out by having astral experiences or however they figured it out, but they actually came up with this very idea. So, now, they didn't understand the science of it. I don't know if that did have anything to do with any astral experiences they had. But they did invent and create chironic time, different from cyclic time or chronic time. Chronic time is the time that's on your watch that we all are familiar with. Cyclic time is time that keeps going back, coming back around to the same kind of thing over and over again. And chronic time, chironic time is the time that we experience in our feelings. And how we feel from moment to moment changes our relative perspective of what the time is like. Wow. And these, all three of these kinds of time can interrelate to each other at the same time. This is how the Greeks saw it, and it's actually the way time can be defined if you look at it from what I just described in the astral world. Fascinating stuff, huh? Okay. So, the people in the fourth astral subworld have a lot of interesting, choices to make. They can live their life in a very spiritual way and do a lot of growing. And then many times they move to a higher subworld to live out the rest of their life. And others choose not to do that. Probably more often than the people who choose to. And those people will remain in the astral, fourth astral subworld, and they become, challenged by all of the conflicts that they experience daily, weekly, yearly, centuries. A lot of different conflicts that come up, and there's really no escape over time. Eventually some of these conflicts are just too great to ignore after decades and centuries of time. Like I said about relationships. You just can't ignore it. After the forces become so great that you can't be with someone any longer because it conflicts with everything about who and what you are. And again, the answer is spiritual. When we live in light, we don't have conflicts. God is non-conflictive. The conflicts are really created mostly by human beings, if you really want to believe that or not. But most other parts of nature and life don't live in the kind of conflicts that humans live in. Sure, animals have conflicts with each other in some parts, other parts of life, so do plants. But those conflicts are minimal in comparison to what humans create. It's pretty hard to believe, but we are our own worst enemy, and we truly make our life miserable and create so much suffering and so much loss of meaning. It's just a big, big problem, the biggest problem. Now let's talk about that. Most people in the fourth astral subworld after the first 100 years of life or so live for meaning in life. Even if they're not living a spiritual life, at least yet, they seek to have a more meaningful life above all else. Now you could say, well, isn't it selfish to seek to have a meaningful life if you aren't helping others to do the same first? And the answer is yes. But they may not know that. So they may seek to have meaning in life, but be down the wayward path of only trying to get it for themselves, which means they will only lose meaning in life. And that causes them to suffer. So this is a big deal. And the fourth astral subworld is the place where people find out more about that than any other part of the astral plane. So all those folks, nearly 40% that are going there, I have a lot they're going to learn. I mean, in a way, you could say that this conflictive part of the astral world is a good place for people to end up to resolve who and what they are and with those that they know. And it's not a bad thing. I don't consider anything I'm describing tonight something that's a punishment. It's not something that's done for any kind of retributive action. It is the simple results of living within and as a part of a being of great, the greatest of all light and the greatest of all of everything that we consider to be good. And while you're living within that being, trying to create something that is a diminution of that being's existence. And as you do that, forces become your life. Now, if you're evil, that may be a good thing for you. You might say, yeah, I like forces. They help me, you know, so on. But you can't be evil and live in the fourth subworld right now. If you become evil, you can't get beyond the sixth astral subworld. You can touch on darkness in the fifth, for sure. But truly being evil requires the sixth or seventh subworlds. And then, of course, eventually you draw yourself into and become part of the eighth sphere. None of that is part of the astral, fourth astral subplane. The fourth astral subplane is immune at the present time from evil. And there's nothing there to point and say, yeah, there it is, there's that evil right there. You won't find it there. You just won't. If anything that's evil can't maintain itself in existence because of loss of consciousness in the fourth astral subplane. So that's good news for us, because you know, that means the folks who are going there also won't experience evil. But the only bad part about that is they may forget what evil is about. Now, if they spiritually serve and co-serve, they may choose at times to go to the sixth or seventh subworld where evil exists and try to do something about it. Remember, they do so as a great sacrifice because time is less dilated, so they use up more of their life. In doing that, they lose some time, and they're in a very conflictive environment. They may lose some of their senses faster too. And some of the folks that live in the sixth and seventh subworlds are downright hostile and nasty, and will try to steal sense from anyone who comes from a higher subworld if they can. Those who come from the second and first subworlds are almost always protected from that, but people from the fourth are not. So they take a great risk. They can go there and even be seduced by some of the things that exist in the sixth, especially some world, and also the seventh sometimes. But and they may actually lose a great deal of consciousness by that, maybe not even be able to leave if they really get enamored by all of the dark ways that people exist there. Of course, there has to have been a seed of that in the first place, so they went to go on with the wrong motive in the first place. And that happened. And there's many folks that live there that will be more than happy to latch on to and seduce in either a sexual or any other way people from the fourth subworld. Or the fifth. It happens more often to people from the fifth than the fourth, but it can happen. Very seldom does it happen to anyone from the third, and virtually never from the two spiritual subworld persons. But again, this has to do with part of the experience of conflict. One of the conflicts of people in the fourth subworld is to get over the hypocrisy. And part of realizing one's hypocrisy is to be tempted by things that are done and to recognize that you're not so spiritual and maybe to look more inward and become more reflective. They're good at that, actually. They can be pretty darn good at being reflective because they're good at using the sacral center to do that and help them. And it is effective. So if people in the fourth subworld, it's a good place to go if you're being challenged by a lot of issues. And it's not a terrible place because there's resolution. And oftentimes resolution is in favor to those that are most needy. That was not a bad thing, is it? No. All right. What else do we want to say about people that are going to the fourth subworld. Well, if you think that's where you're going to go because your desires are in the direction of it, if you read Afterlife Love, you say, and you read about the fourth subworld, so, well, that's the kind of place I think I'll end up, or that's the place where I want to go. If people are either one of those places, then it's a good thing to look at the challenges that I'm talking about in tonight's show. Because those challenges, if you can become aware of them while you're physically alive, remember, the seeds are all there before you go to the astral. You can work on them here. And the good news is, you may actually end up not going to the fourth astral subworld. Maybe you'll end up becoming a spiritual disciple. Most people who are spiritual disciples start in the physical world, not in the astral world. I know that's hard to believe, but most do. The reason for it is that it's too easy to slough off and not really complete the spiritual discipline necessary when you end up in, say, the fourth astral subworld. It's like, you know, you can make a lot of compromises, and you may not get to the point where you truly lead a spiritual life. You lead a somewhat spiritual life, a little bit, here and there. Enough to look like you are, but not enough to be like you are. And so that's where the challenge comes in, to actually make that commitment and keep it. And do it here if you can. If you don't do it here, remember this show when you get to the fourth astral subworld, and do it early there. Earlier is better. And challenging the science of what I'm saying is good, too. If you astral travel, and I know a few of you do out there, challenge the things I'm saying to see whether they're true or not when you do this out-of-body stuff, and see whether it's accurate. If it's inaccurate, or you think it is, communicate with me about it. And if it is accurate, then let other people know, and so that they can confirm it too. And, I mean, this is the sort of stuff that really helps everybody to lead a more spiritual life, because the more you understand, the better off you're going to be, both physically, while you're physically alive, and in the astral world. Now, I don't encourage people to do astral traveling, because it reduces sense. Particularly when you go to the lower astral subworld, the fifth, sixth, or seventh, you lose a considerable amount of sense in your etheric senses as well as your astral. So you become less empathic, and you become less sensitive to the physical world. That's not, those are not really good outcomes. Now, going once or twice in an out-of-body experience may prove to you the existence of some of the things I talk about, and more importantly, that God exists, and there's life after death, and all those are really big concepts and ideas to be convinced about for some people, because it helps them to not fear death or not fear the end of existence in their mind, because they may think that that's what's going to happen when they die. Of course, if you know that you're going to this particular subworld, then you just, there's no more fear, right, of that. Your consciousness is going to go on. So you don't have a physical body. Is that such a big deal? Most people like being in an astral body more than they do the physical body. Physical bodies are extremely confining. They often have very rough senses. They're more gross in the way they sense things. They're resistant to change. They don't damage quite as easily as the astral senses. But they also, the whole body doesn't live very long. So, yeah, okay. And there's a lot of problems in trying to get the senses in the physical body to be balanced. They don't balance as easily as the astral, because they don't change very quickly or very easily. So being physically alive has many negative attributes in comparison to being astrally alive, and those people who go on to live astrally usually don't miss their physical bodies all that much. Oh, in the seventh subworld, people do, but not so much anyplace else. Maybe the sixth sometimes, too, people like to have the sensation of physicality and some things. But the fact of the matter is, beyond those moments when they miss that, The rest of the time, they're freer. They're less encumbered. There's less sense of force. There's a greater sense of mobility and the ability to transport yourself. Your movement, the ability to sense in general, is greater in the astral world, and particularly in the fourth astral sub-world. Because there is greater balance of the senses that by far than in the lower sub-world, and you definitely have a closer relationship with God. People feel that way anyway. And so life does have greater meaning overall, although there's conflicts that come from being conscious of the nuances of loss of being that you don't experience in the fifth sub-world as much. People in the fifth sub-world can go centuries before they notice what people in the fourth sub-world notice in a month. That's a big difference. And that's part of the conflict issue. The more you notice things, the more you may become conflicted about them. If you don't notice them so much, you don't body. So you keep plodding along in the same way you were. And oddly, relationships in the fifth astral subworld can actually last longer than in the fourth because of that very concept. So you can actually, even though the seven-year thing is pretty much true everywhere, it's much more true in the fourth than it is true in the fifth. Fifth, people have been known to be together for hundreds of years. It's pretty boring. They don't have much creativity, so they don't have very many differences and forces between them as they create different lives, because they don't have different lives. They kind of live like automatons, and they say, oh, okay, everything's the same as it was last month, last year, last century. No change, it's fine. Well, that's not such a good thing. That is definitely not a good thing. But it still allows them to sometimes maintain friendships and also loving relationships, love with the little owl, I guess, for longer periods of time in the fifth sub-world. The sixth, forget it. People don't usually stay together virtually at all. They just, all they care about is having a similar kind of experience with something else that they like. And 10 other people might be do just as well. Kind of crazy stuff, though. Okay, but anyway, the thing to realize here is that the fourth subworld is a place of unusual conflict caused by unusually high levels of creativity that they try to resolve through balance. Sometimes we'll call it compromise, and sometimes because of compromise, they maintain it but still keep losing meaning in life. Compromise is not a way of, we'll say, offsetting, not a way of offsetting, a loss of meaning in life. And conflicts between people because of forces developing between. I know that sounds terrible because most people like the word compromise. They think it's a good thing. Oh, yeah, I like to compromise. But in reality, compromise is a failure to create or co-create in God's light. It's caused by a willingness to give up some of the light of God for the selfishness of each of the parties compromising. Now that may be difficult to understand, but people in the fourth astral subworld are constantly facing that issue and realize eventually, which we don't necessarily in this world, that compromise doesn't solve their problem. It may even inflict greater levels of suffering on them over time. Now, it's true here too. I don't want you to think, well, there's a truth there that doesn't apply here. No, it does apply here. It's just that we live in such illusion, we don't notice it. Because we don't notice the loss of light. It happens from the compromise. And you could say, well, if you're uncompromising, how can you work with other people? Well, by each of the people finding the light of the soul or light of God in each other, and then there's no need to compromise. That's called spiritual hierarchical thought, for those of you who know the technical name of it. But it's really different than human resolving conflict. The only way to resolving conflict is to find a exchange of selfish motives that each can live with. Whereas soul ways of resolving conflict is to find higher and better ways of serving, co-serving with God and in light, and then there is no compromise because there's just light. That's a little hard for us to understand, I know, because most people think, well, everybody has their own truth, everybody has their own way of seeing things. Well, of course, that's not true, but it's true as far as what people want to believe, so I guess it's what we live our life by, and if we're going to live our life by that, then that may be true for us, but it's not the way the actual universe works, the way humans on Earth at the present time tend to think. All right, so the fourth astral subworld is actually a remedy for this whole idea of conflict. And the younger inhabitants there, the people who, you know, haven't lived there that long, tend to do some compromising. But as you look at the people who've been there longer, and they have, over time, many of them, not all of them, have given up on the idea of compromising. Instead, they work more and more spiritually. And some of them, find themselves living a spiritual life, and the need for compromise is no longer needed. As a matter of fact, it's considered a very negative way of resolving the conflicts between people. Interesting point. Wow. All right, so there's a lot to be learned there for us living here, because it's the same. It really isn't a difference. I know the physics are different, but the point is that it's just really a matter of time. Not so much a matter of what the actual end result is going to be. Fascinating. All right, so let me go into some of the elements of what it would mean to us today to change the world so that people might, in some future time, maybe dozens of decades, I don't know how long it's going to be, from now. But if we could look at what the reality is that I just described, the plurality of people go to the fourth astral subworld to live out an extended lifetime of many hundreds of years. With that knowledge, and if people accepted that, let's say we taught that generally to people, and a lot of people bought it and had some out-of-body experiences, some people, and other people figured it out and went through all the science of it and said, yeah, this guy's not crazy, he's talking the truth, and others are doing the same thing. Fine. All right. So if we get to that point, the world will change in the following ways. And this is not the fourth astral subworld. It's people who would be going to the fourth astral subworld. And let's look at it from their perspective of their viewpoint. People would, first of all, start living more creatively instead of being fearful of loss of money, time, loss of sense, loss of relationships, loss. And they would not measure their creative efforts by such, we'll call it, negative factors. Instead of by light, they're measuring it by darkness. How dark is it going to become if I, you know, create this or that and it doesn't work or doesn't go the way I want it? So the first element of conflict that people are going to try to undo when they go to the fourth subworld can be dealt with readily in the physical world if we were to teach children to be creative and to not fear the issues that hamper their creativity, including the stern nature of the educational system, which tries to prevent people from being creative. So we could change all of this. And I want to show you what might actually, could actually happen. If you were to start with young people today, and you were to educate them about all the stuff I talk about on the show, and some of the things I've written about, etc. And their whole perspective on life will be radically different. The desire to live in the fourth astral subworld will be supplanted by the desire to live that way here. Now, why would that be the case? Well, first of all, if we could eliminate the fear of death, which we could do if we taught ageless wisdom to people, to children, I'm talking about certainly by the time they're 7 years old, if not earlier. And so you give them these concepts about God, and you explain how the universe works according to your best understandings, and they test it out themselves. Kids aren't stupid. They're going to eventually check things out. They're fine. But they do so 20, 30, 40 years before the people who generally hear me. And so that's a good thing, because in that process of time, they're getting over the compensatory desires or glamours that riddle people, that pushes them into some form of non-spiritual astral life, which the fourth astral subplane is. It's remedial, right? It's not bad, but it is remedial. And it would alleviate that very pressure and would change the perspective of future generations. It would literally change the entire world. All through education. Now, I know that some people say, well, you can't educate yourself out of every problem. I'm not trying to. I'm suggesting a improvement from the present paradigm that is happening. What's happening is nearly 40% of the people are going to the fourth astral subworld after death. Bummer. And we could cut that way down. Now, where would they go instead? Well, the answer would be more naturally. They would skip the third and probably end up in the second astral subworld as a spiritual server, because they would have already done some spiritual discipline in their physical life. Wow, that's not such a bad idea. Now, that's just about teaching children these concepts. And if your school don't do that, which most of them don't, then why not teach your children and other children now the same thing? Why not make that, if you're an adult listening, part of what you're going to do? You're going to offer a class. It could be in your house, in the community center, it doesn't matter where it is, I don't care. And it's going to be a class that you teach about these subjects. Really. You teach it in the most basic of ways. And if you want assistance, hey, give the people I work with a call, because they'll assist you. Really. No, you're not going to become an expert. We're not saying that you're going to be a absolute substitute for someone who's an expert. You don't have to be an expert to deal with this with children. But the idea that life exists after death, and how and why, etc., and especially that 40%, almost one out of two kids is going to end up going to this conflicted place where you got to work all this out. Why not try to undo that right from the beginning? It solves so many problems, and it changes their very existence. Maybe they'll become a spiritual disciple while they're physically alive. What a wonderful thing. Okay, so that's my first thought about it. And then the next thought is, okay, we still have other people besides children, right? What about them? Okay, 40% is a pretty big number. So when you talk to people, see what their desires are. If they entertain the idea if there is an afterlife, say, what is it going to be like? Have you ever thought about it? And they say, well, I don't know. You sit on a cloud and you play a harp or something. And it's like, you really don't believe that. Well, I don't know. It could be something more like, it's kind of like here, but it's a lot better. And, okay, just tell me what you would think it to be. you'll find out if they're one of the 40% or so, because they're going to tell you what their desires are, right? And if they match what you know the fourth astral subworld is, you can make suggestions about how to resolve those conflicts that you know about. You don't have to tell them necessarily, unless they want to hear them, right now, in things that they're doing right now. And that may lead them to eventually, when they do die, into more quickly going through the conflicts in the fourth astral subworld, or going to a higher subworld altogether. But in either case, higher in consciousness subworld, in either case, it can't hurt. It would be helpful. And that could be part of what it means for some people to be spiritually serving. At least communicate this stuff. I don't know how many people I talk to that say they know about me, say about they heard something about what I've taught, or some other teachers, or whatever, and yet they never talk about it with anybody else. It kind of shocks me. I'm not saying like it's an obligation, like, well, you've got to pay back, you know, by doing it. It's not an obligation. But it certainly makes a difference, because remember, if you're one of those 40% going to the fourth subplane, astral subplane, you're going to be with the same folks. Then I'm saying, why not let them know about it? Because that reduces conflict when you get to the other side as well, right? As well as here. Both. Why not do that now? It certainly makes more sense to me than what most people do, which is they don't say anything. Well, I can't tell anybody else about this stuff. It's too far out there. They'll think I'm strange. Really? I think it's more strange to not say anything when this is what you think is the way the universe works, and this is what you feel, and for some people, this is what you believe. So if all that is true, isn't it strange to be, like, hiding it from others? I think it's real strange. I think it's a lot stranger than letting people know that this is how you think. But I know. The fear. That's part of it. That's part of it. People are sure they get over that fear when they get to the astral world, because you're dead. But you're not. So now you don't have to tell people that you really don't die when you die. Because consciousness goes on, but the body, your focus is on a different body. But there's still so many parts of this that I talked about tonight that are important to share with others, that it goes way beyond the question of what happens when you die. Granted, it's good to start there, because I think it's an important place to start from. But it doesn't change. It doesn't change for a moment that you have all these other things that I talked about in tonight's show that are conflictive, that could be improved right here, right now. And remember, the people that you are interacting with here, good chance you're going to be with some of those same people when you're over there. Something worthwhile to think about. Now, some people have told me for a long time that they listen to everything, they believe some of it, but they think it's just too hard for them to change. They've been this way for a long time. They're set in their ways, and they've got a spouse that's this way, and they've got a child that's this way. They got everything, and a mother, and a father, and a brother, and a sister, whatever. And they use that as the reason for them not to change. It's like, well, yeah, if you get more like God, if you get more enlightened, that's really going to be a bad thing. Well, if you put it that way, you see, you got to kind of think about it that way. The problem seems to be that mixed in with the fears is also the idea of just taking the effort, just doing the things that are restrictive of a, we'll say, personality that wants to do whatever it feels like doing whenever it does it. That's it. And people don't want to restrict themselves about those issues. They tend to see themselves as being deprived by being spiritual and invoking some sort of spiritual discipline. Now, I can understand that. I'm not condemning anybody for saying that or feeling that or thinking that. But here's an interesting point to consider. If that's something, and that's what a lot of people are having an issue with, why not consider it this way? One way or another, if you're one of the 40%, you're going to this fourth astral subworld, where you're going to be in conflict with the things that you right now are scheming on. Why not say to yourself, one way or another, this is going to be a conflict. It could be a conflict for hundreds of years there, or maybe a few years here. Why not spend a few years here and get it done? Because that's what it is. When you balance the whole thing out, that's how it turns out to be. As weird as it sounds, everything is going so slow here because of great forces and illusion, but spiritual change happens faster here if you're willing to do it here. That's the reason this is the best place to do it. Partly because the rewards are so great here in comparison to the other side. The other side, when you overcome a conflict, there's small amounts of change. Here, when you overcome a conflict, there's a huge change. And that's the benefit. The benefit of the physical world is, although it's extremely forceful, it has a lot of problems, there's no question this is the hardest, most difficult part of the universe to exist in, it has a reward. The reward is when you succeed, you do so sometimes much faster than you would in an easier place to exist in, and you do so actually gaining some things that cannot be explained until after you're through it, because this is a place where once you overcome the inertia and forces, you end up with a momentum change. And because of the high inertia, once the momentum gets going, it actually is difficult to stop, and it's the momentum for change towards being more godlike. You may change much faster than in a much easier environment like the fourth astral subworld. Sounds a little counterintuitive, I know, but it's actually true. You've just got to try it. Once people have successfully dealt with some serious issues in themselves, they move way faster than they would in any of the lower than second subworld experiences that I've seen people have in the astral world. Granted, you go into these first and second astral subworlds, people change very rapidly in relationship, even to here or anywhere. That's a totally different thing. Those people have already been, they went through their physical life, usually spiritually disciplining themselves. Or they spent an inordinate amount of effort and time doing it in the fourth astral subworld, as an example, and maybe made it to the second. In either case, it didn't start there. It started much earlier someplace else. And here is a good place to do it because it brings joy and eventually bliss here. And these are in short supply for those people. So this is a worthwhile venture to deal with the conflicts that I've talked about tonight that are likely going to happen to 40%, give or take, other people that are going to end up in the fourth astral subworld and deal with those conflicts right here, right now. Now, for people who may not be going to the fourth astral subworld and don't even believe they're going to go up there, but they believe they're going to go somewhere, there's reason to change too, but they're in a different position. Their position is more fundamental. They have more mundane discipline to do than they have spiritual. And that's a whole different ballgame. It's just nothing wrong with it. And that mundane discipline involves all the different areas that people exist in within the physical world. It could be everything from what food you eat to how you take care of your general health and exercise to the ways that you communicate with people on a daily basis. It's all kinds of stuff. Those kinds of things, there's nothing wrong with disciplining yourself about that. But those people that do that are doing it more to develop their lower self than they are to develop more of God. And for those that are doing that, that's okay. And they're more likely to going to the fifth or sixth or some other subclaim than the fourth. Because they won't be reaching the same conflictive issues about God or not God, because most of the things they're doing are about themselves. They're inordinately more selfish than people who go through fourth astral subworld after death. So there's a difference. There's a significant difference in quality. That doesn't mean those people can't eventually spiritually discipline themselves as well. I don't want to discourage them. But if we were going to divide up people by where they're going to go at this moment, then we know that the 40% or so are going to the fourth astral subplane. That means that 60% are not. Some are going to the third, second, or first. That might amount to only about 10-20%. And then the rest are going to the fifth, sixth, or seventh. So you can see how this all divides up. And some people say, well, we keep ignoring the eighth sphere. There are just so few people that end up in the eighth sphere. I mean, there's very, very few people who are evil. Not enough to really be concerned about in terms of numerical issues. Certainly in terms of what they do, terrible things they do to the whole world. And all of us suffer from it. That's a different thing. If you're measuring it that way, you get a different answer. But not other than that. Okay, so there is this, I mean, if we're going to look at this subject, then really, everybody could be doing a heck of a lot to make a difference before they leave and go to live in the astral world. And the significant differences are from lessons about the astral world. So knowing what you're facing when you're going to go there, they encourage you, I hope, to change some of the things you're doing here right now. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Let's talk about significant relationships, both friendships and loving relationships, so sexual or romantic, we'll call it, nature. Those relationships are critical. The other part of the equation is relationships with siblings and children, with our children and children of sometimes other people. Those relationships also have very strong consequences in and of and on people's lives. It's critical, I think, to consider that even if you don't care much about what's going to happen after you die, those relationships play very heavily on your life while you're physically here, right? So, looking at it from that standpoint, the conflicts that people have about creativity apply here as well. When you start creating yourself in a mundane way, into a person different than your spouse, your children, your friend, and other relatives, the results are you distance yourself from them. The distance is caused by the creation itself. You're creating yourself differently from their creations, and those differences, if they don't have the commonality of light or God, or the light of our soul, causes us to push away and to not be close. We feel the loss of the closeness in those situations. The answer could be, well, then stop being creative, you know. Well, if you don't create, then you stop growing. And eventually you become boring. So does the other person. That doesn't, two borings don't make a single non-boring. They make double the boring. So it doesn't help. All right. So the answer here is to try to find some areas where each of you can share something, whatever it might be, that is of a spiritual nature. Spiritual meaning giving to others in wise and unconditional ways that meet the needs of others to become more giving themselves, as a primary test. So if we do that, and if you can find that with all the people I just said, your children, your spouse, your friends, you build a relationship between you that makes greater intimacy and improves the way that you, we'll say, relate to each other, so that you're not creating forces between each other, you're not boring each other, you're helping each other to become more creative, while you're helping them at the same time to help others. That is the best answer for dealing with any kind of relationship issue that you're having now, so that you don't end up having that as one of the conflictive issues, if especially you're going through the fourth astral subworld, or any of the other subworlds that are below the spiritual plane, spiritual ones. You see how fascinating this is, because really, a lot of this that we're talking about tonight is about now. It isn't about, oh, I'll wait till I die and then I'll listen to a show. I mean, some people do that anyway, or some people won't bother to even listen, maybe, or maybe they're sleeping right now, who knows. But at any rate, the important thing to realize is that there is value in making some changes. That doesn't mean you have to change everything about yourself, and they don't have to change everything about themselves in order for you to maintain a relationship. I'm saying just some of the time, some of the things are done with virtue as the primary emphasis, the light of God in form. You're doing it because you're a soul, at least during that period of time. It may not be every minute of every day. It might be a small portion of the minutes in each day. But any amount will significantly improve those relationships and allow someone the luxury not having to be driven by their glamours, the fixed desires, say that, after they die. And much more creativity, much more of a life can be created for, by a person if they're not being driven by these glamours that control them. Same is true while they're physically alive, although the glamours are subdued to some extent by the forces of the surrounding physical world. No matter what you feel, you can only do certain things because the forces prevent you otherwise. Not true in the astral world, but certainly true here. So glamours only affect us somewhat here, but they tremendously affect us over there. And there's literally virtually no way to get around it, no way to get away from them, because they are so incredibly powerful in our astral body, when that is the body of primary consciousness. You think that your desires control you here, wait till you get to the astral world. But remember, in the fourth astral subworld, the conflicts mitigate some of those desires, so that the conflicts lead you to a more spiritual life. That's the whole idea of this fourth subworld. That's what it's kind of meant to do. Although people don't know that necessarily for 100 or 200 years of time. Or maybe if they heard the show, then they might say, well, I listen to this guy's show. I know what's coming. It's all going to be about conflict. And everything. So, you know, it depends. Some people do have a better grasp on this. And there are teachers. There are teachers that come to the fourth subworld more often than any other subworld, actually. I don't know if it's because they like to go there, but people from the second subworld like to go to the fourth subworld a lot. And they help, they teach ageless wisdom. And people in the fourth subworld, maybe you can believe this, but they are fascinated by it. They may not follow, but they are fascinated by it. And they know it's mostly true, so because they live in a world that proves it to them, but they do get like it a lot. Now, the people, the spiritual disciples, as you call them, that exist in the first subworld, the highest subworld of consciousness, they tend to go into some of the lower subworlds, below the fourth, and serve some people there, because those people are more intractable and more difficult. And it's a greater sacrifice for them to do that, because the time dilation is terrible, brutal. If everybody you know is living 24 times the dilation of time here, and you go to serve in a world where it's 6 times, that means you're giving up 3/4 of your life in the astral world. Just to serve there. If you did that almost all the time, which they don't do all the time, but they may spend a significant portion of their life being in a lower sub-world, they don't do it all the time. Some of them serve mostly from the first sub-world, and others serve mostly by going to the lower sub-world. It depends on the nature of what their service is and what they believe is right for them. Also, some people in the fourth sub-world get to the second by people in the second helping them stay conscious for an hour or two. And that costs them sense. It costs the people who exist in the second sub-world some sense to actually give sense to people so they can stay conscious enough to experience the second sub-world for a few hours. A day is a long time, and to do this procedure. And requires a lot of sense to be given from a lot of different people, because one person can't usually maintain it without hurting themselves considerably. So it's done infrequently, and it's done to be of service to those who are attempting to raise their consciousness. And it does help sometimes to go to a higher subworld, particularly for people in the fourth, because they see the difference between their hypocritical nature and the fakeness they have to their spirituality and those who are really spiritual. They get to see the difference. They get to experience the difference. And that's a good thing. They go back and they to the fourth subworld, and they're more motivated to make a change, to make an improvement, and do something about it. Now, we here in the physical world could have a little bit of that experience, too. I mean, we're not going to have people from the second subworld coming, and we're not going to be able to go there necessarily. But you can be around people who are spiritually disciplining themselves. And in some ways, there's places you can go. You can come visit some people I know who are doing it. And this gives you the opportunity to gain some understanding about it. Now, you might get in the way, so you should consider that you're going to need to be some ways co-serving, so it might be a challenge. But the point is that it does give people some motivation to change themselves, to see that others are doing this. And if you can be someone who helps others that way, that's great. That's wonderful. So you can even do some of these things sort of here in the physical world. We actually can replicate some of the grand solutions, we'll say, that have been created in the astral world to get people over being selfish and saving hundreds and hundreds of years of life for a more promised, more, we'll say, productive way of becoming God. Because the more you do co-serve with God, the more you become that being, even though it's only a fraction, a very small fraction of God. You become some more of it in who you are, even though it's individually created, because it isn't a copy of God. You can't copy God. God made itself uncopyable. You can only co-create. You can't copy. I know that sounds hard to understand. Well, then how do I know what I'm co-creating into if I can't see what God is? Well, you can see what God is. But you can't copy what God is. Because you can't copy God's creation. You can only co-create with God and learn creation from that model. Okay. Too much? All right. Well, you think about it. So, at any rate, we're almost out of time. I'm going to look at the clock here. All right. So, hey, let's kind of wrap this up, because I really should have left another 5 or 10 minutes for this. But the fourth astral subworld is a world in which the people who go there are trying to get over hypocrisy about being spiritual, are attempting to find their way of creating that is truly co-creative with their creator and like a soul. They're trying to find ways of becoming more permanent in relationships with people that are close, but also spiritual. They're trying to, through numerous forms of conflict, which I talked about in tonight's show, through each one of those conflictive issues, they're trying to find a more spiritual life by balancing all of the conflicts with a more creative spiritual approach to whatever that conflict is. And balancing it with all the other conflicts. Remember that. Not just balance it with itself, but it has to be balanced in their whole life so that you constantly are changing themselves. But they're doing so for the purpose, hopefully, of co-creating with God so they develop closer relationships with everybody that's around with them. Otherwise, they develop forces, which is not a good thing, but they have to learn that. They have to understand that. And they have to remember they did the same thing probably while they were physically alive and even be able to reflect on that, which they're very good at. They're good on that. That's putting their strength. They like a beautiful place. They create beauty, but they don't create things that aren't useful in beauty. The things they create are beautiful and have to have some relationship to other life. It may not be their life, but some life. Some person, some animal, some plant finds what they create to be of help to them. And then those things remain almost indefinitely. A wonderful thing, actually. Because they learn that the nature of existence, impermanence, is that everything is co-creative with life, therefore it is changing, but it's changing as a value to life, not as a value to some selfish, possessive person. They make beautiful things, but they don't necessarily possess those beautiful things. And sometimes they give them up. Also, they begin to realize that their life is really a life which is without end and has the potential to become something much greater if they choose to spiritually discipline themselves. Almost everybody that goes to the fourth astral subplane is in conflict about whether they're going to continue to focus on greater and greater amounts of spiritual discipline or not. Majority still of those people don't. They do a little bit, and then not much more. In a lot of different areas. They don't keep it up. But the minority of the minority, some do exceptionally well. And they even go to higher subworlds and live a much more spiritual life in those higher subworlds. Going to the fourth subplane is a gift, but it is not a gift of peace. It's a gift of conflict that eventually will become harmonious for those who find that God is the answer. And those who reject that usually find life losing meaning and their overall level of harmony is diminished and not increased. So the fourth astral subplane, while it's a plurality of people go there, and it's the largest subplane in terms of population, it is not panacea. It certainly is not heaven, by what some people think heaven is. But it is a place where productive things can be done to serve and to do great changes in oneself and those that are close to us. Well, we're out of time for right now. I hope this show has made a difference. Certainly has been an in-depth show, as I said it would be, but we covered a lot of areas. And a lot of physics in a strange way. I kind of did it more in the force way. Force ray physics, okay. Well, we're out of time, and until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.